This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The job market is still stagnant.
When will it improve?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, July 1st. Jobs are still tough to come by. We will get a fuller picture of employment tomorrow, but there are snapshots out today.
BP launches a cash raiser that's different from a fundraiser. We'll tell you how. And could the healthcare law have sparked a fake-and-bake binge? But first,
the government said today new applications for unemployment insurance rose last week unexpectedly. Also today, private companies reported a higher number of planned layoffs. That's according to the HR firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. Joining us now is Julia Coronado, senior U.S. economist at BNP Paribas in New York. Julia, hello.
Good morning.
Boil this down for us. What does this morning's employment news tell us?
Well, it's not encouraging news, but I wouldn't want to overstate it. We have seen numbers in of a similar magnitude in April and May, and we actually saw the private sector hiring on balance. So it doesn't say we're moving aggressively towards strong job growth, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we've lost all of the momentum.
I don't want to overstate the danger. I'm glad to hear you say that. I do want to ask you about this, though. The stock market just had its worst quarter since the crisis hit. Publications, including the New York Times, are talking about the risk of a depression. How much of a risk do you think that is?
Well, it's not the most likely scenario, but there are risks that we have to take seriously. For example, if the European situation turns into a global financial crisis, then very possibly we could be right back in recession. Again, I think policymakers are trying very hard to avoid that. So, I don't think that's the most likely outcome, but there are real risks out there. There are reasons for the financial markets to worry.
Okay, it's economist Julia Coronado at BNP Paribas. Thanks, Julia.
It's my pleasure.
And more than a million of those laid-off workers won't get their unemployment benefits reinstated. Not before Congress goes on vacation. Senate Republicans filibustered a bill last night to extend unemployment benefits.
Today, the state of Arizona enacts its ban on payday lenders. From here on out, lenders will have to limit interest rates to 36%. But as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports, lenders are expected to find ways around those new restrictions.
Hundreds of stores in Arizona will no longer be able to charge triple-digit interest rates. Consumer groups hail the new protections for Arizona borrowers, but
we know that winning the victory is only half the battle. Enforcement is very important.
That's Kelly Griffith, co-director of the Center for Economic Integrity in Tucson.
The payday lending industry itself is pretty good at adapting and finding loopholes in our laws.
15 other states have laws that cap interest rates, but in some cases, lenders have repackaged loans under different names. They charge the same high interest rates for prepaid debit cards or auto title loans. Griffiths Group has organized volunteers who will spy on lenders and report abuses to state officials. Arizona's attorney general has created a task force to crack down on lenders who continue to charge more than 36% interest. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, July 1st. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. An important part of the healthcare reform law goes into effect today. Temporary high-risk insurance pools in some states will start taking applications. The pools are intended to provide insurance until the law fully takes effect in 2014. But the application process is complicated, and not everyone's expected to get in, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
The health care reform law will prohibit insurers from denying coverage because of a pre-existing condition, but not until 2014. The temporary high-risk pools are envisioned as a bridge to 2014, but there won't be room for everyone. Vivian Ho is a health care economist at Rice University.
There is going to have to be a limit on this particular program. There just isn't enough money.
The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that if there's no limit, federal funding for the temporary high-risk pools will run out by 2013, so the uninsured should apply right away. Some of the pools will be administered by the states, others by the federal government. Richard Cauchi is a health policy expert at the National Conference of State Legislatures. He says the federal government is launching a new website today in an effort to reduce confusion.
The real challenge is to get the word out in a positive, effective media marketing style.
The website will let you compare insurance plans and figure out if you're eligible for the temporary high-risk pool. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
One of the biggest studies to look at money and happiness reports there really is a connection, or at least there can be one. The survey released today in the Washington Post also shows there are specific factors besides money that affect positive feelings. Ed Diener is Distinguished Professor of Psychology at the University of Illinois. He led the study. He's with us live from Salt Lake City this morning. Professors, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve.
I always thought it was cliche, this idea that money can't buy you happiness. What's the takeaway from this study?
Well, our answer is that happiness is more than one thing. So what money does is buy you what you want, and then it increases your life satisfaction some. But it can't make you want what you buy so much, so it doesn't increase your enjoyment of life quite as much. So what we find is that social things and using your skills increase your feelings of enjoyment of life, and of course money can help with that a little bit, but mostly what money does is give you the things you want in life and make you more satisfied.
I mean, is there something, can you quantify it? Does it take a certain amount of money to...
Well, what we find is that those first dollars count a lot. And then there's that, what you know is declining marginal utility. Every dollar above that matters less and less. So if somebody's going to go from zero to 40,000 a year, that's going to be a huge difference because now they can meet their basic needs for food and shelter and all that. But if you go from $1 million to $2 million, it's not going to make much difference because it's a slight difference in how you live.
In how you live, right, right. And does money play different roles in different cultures?
Well, we find that it's pretty universal around the world now, and we think television might be the culprit in that. So we go to all sorts of places, 150 countries now in the Gallup World Poll that we've studied, 150 countries of the world, which is most of them. And in every place, we find that money is related to life satisfaction, but not so much to enjoyment of life.
That's interesting. Professor Ed Diener from the University of Illinois, we do thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, July 1st. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Toyota says it's recalling about 250,000 of the vehicles it has sold worldwide. The cars and trucks are said to have engine problems that could cause them to stall. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson joins us from New York with more. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Bill.
Jeremy, which vehicles are we talking about this time?
We're talking about seven Lexus models. Now, to be clear, Toyota says no accidents have been linked to this issue, though it has received hundreds of customer complaints. And, of course, it's another PR blow for Toyota, which had to recall some 8.5 million vehicles because of that accelerator issue. Now, in this case, we're talking about, as you said, 270,000 vehicles, but a third of those were sold in Japan.
Now, Jeremy, it sounds like this is not as serious as those sudden accelerator problems. So is this just Toyota being extra careful?
Yeah, absolutely. Going the extra mile, and especially with the Lexus brand. This is Toyota's luxury brand, and Peter Wells, who directs the Center for Automotive Industry Research at Cardiff University in the UK, says for Toyota, maintaining Lexus's reputation is absolutely vital.
Lexus did a fantastic job for Toyota in terms of carving out competition against the likes of Mercedes and BMW, Audi, you know, the prestige brands that consumers would aspire to. Toyota does not want to have that brand tarnished now, and it's extremely unfortunate for the company.
And Wells says it's impossible for any car company to avoid problems like this, but he says Toyota will have to work harder than its competitors to assure customers that its vehicles are safe, especially given all the problems we've heard so much about.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson. Jeremy, thank you.
Thanks.
A few minutes ago, we talked about the challenges facing this economy. I know you're familiar with them: unemployment, deficits, European debt. Marketplace's economics editor, Chris Farrell, says there is another headwind that ought to be getting more attention. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Bill.
You think we ought to be talking about an economic crisis in education?
Yes. As bad as unemployment is for the country as a whole, it is terrible if you hadn't gone to college. I mean, the unemployment rate for people with a high school degree only is double the rate of people who have at least a college degree. And by the way, if you don't have a high school diploma, it's even worse.
Well, I get that that is scary for the uneducated worker. How is this, though, a threat to our entire economy?
Bill, this is what's happening. You know, the U.S. economy increasingly emphasizes college-educated workers, and business is creating jobs. There are job openings in this economy, but most require some kind of post-secondary education to even apply. So it's become something, it's a vicious cycle. Business looks for educated workers, job openings go begging, incomes stay low, unemployment stays high, the rebound is subdued, and so on.
Well, here's a problem, Chris. What can we do? Because if it's a government solution, not only is our government in debt, but, you know, throwing money at education hasn't necessarily improved it.
No, you're right. But you know that the alarm bells have been going off, you know, about our failing education system, especially in the inner city. But now we can see that it's economically damaging. So whether it's charter schools, vouchers, smaller high schools, early childhood education, it's not more money. It's a focus on reforming education.
Reforming education to focus on 21st century type jobs?
It's the focus on 21st century type jobs, but here's the more important thing. It is to end the crisis with high school dropouts. In some inner cities, the high school dropout rate is 40, 50%. This is unacceptable. And these people who drop out then can't take the jobs and can't climb into the middle class. And that's what our society is about, that our children will live a better life than you and I.
Marketplace's economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Bill.
Listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now we're going to get a take on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. The latest on BP and the oil gusher in the Gulf of Mexico that's consuming the environment and the British oil company. Today, the spill is likely to become the largest ever in the Gulf, 140 million gallons released. That would eclipse the former record holder, an oil disaster back in 1979. And with a cleanup bill at $2 billion and counting, BP is trying to raise more cash. Analysts say the company needs the money to fill its escrow account for the leak. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more.
The idea that BP may run short of cash would have seemed laughable before the disaster in the Gulf. It was Britain's biggest company. It was awash with money. But in recent weeks, the company has felt compelled to raise more than $20 billion. Now it's reported to be tapping its bankers again. BP is said to be trying to borrow another $5 billion. Nick McGregor is chief oil analyst with brokers Redmayne Bentley. He says BP is preparing for the financial fallout.
It's building a war chest at the moment. It's accumulating funds to deal with the worst-case scenario from the Gulf of Mexico.
BP shares have enjoyed a rare revival. They shot up more than 5% yesterday after analysts suggested that ExxonMobil should bid for the beleaguered company. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
By the way, BP's market capitalization has shrunk by about $100 billion, and shares in the oil giant have lost more than half their value since the spill began on April 20th. Several countries in East Africa are taking a step towards regional economic integration today, but the African trade deal has some people worried about similar pacts. From Arusha, Tanzania, Benedict Moran reports.
Considering all the trouble the European Union is having, it may be a surprise that the economies of Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi formally enter a similar deal today. The East Africa Common Market means more than 126 million people will soon be able to travel freely, find jobs, and start businesses in any of these countries. It's a major step towards the eventual unification of East Africa along the lines of the European Union. Juma Mwapachu, Secretary General of the East African Community, says he hopes less red tape will attract more foreign investors.
This is really the approach that we are really going to take. Use the common market now as a platform for purposes of joint promotion of investments into our region.
But not everyone here is happy. A lot of the complaints sound like those coming out of Europe. Smaller economies in the region are afraid of being overrun by Kenya, which makes up nearly half of the $73 billion bloc. That's like what many in Europe feel about Germany. The U.S. ambassador to the East African Community says the common market will make it cheaper for U.S. companies to do business here. In Arusha, Tanzania, I'm Benedict Moran for Marketplace.
Gourmet food trucks are the latest craze in a lot of major cities, but not in Chicago. Red tape in the second city is making it impossible to cook on the go. From Chicago Public Radio, Tony Arnold reports.
You might want to call food trucks the anti-drive-thru. The idea being chefs can bring food to customers anywhere they are. Matt Maroney has cooked at several high-end restaurants in Chicago, but now he's looking to make it on his own, and he's leading the charge to bring food trucks to the city. The only issue being current law forbids trucks from being licensed kitchens.
It's got to be properly ventilated. You have to have wastewater systems and freshwater systems and things of that nature. And that's all part of the code. That's why the code's such a beast.
That's where Scott Wagesback enters. He's a member of the city council who's working to make cooking in mobile kitchens legal. He says food trucks are a valuable member of the community.
They are job creators, they are fun, they get food out into areas of the city that might not otherwise have it.
Not to mention the city can collect additional taxes, but Wegesbeck says he's running into some resistance. Other members of the city council are worried about what they consider unfair competition, like a food truck serving burritos right outside an already established Mexican restaurant. Still, one company, Flirty Cupcakes, is already trying to make a variation on food trucks work. Their cupcakes are baked and prepared in a licensed kitchen, loaded onto a van, then served from any open parking space downtown. It has a huge following on Twitter, full of people waiting to see where the van is parked. Tiffany Kurtz runs Flirty Cupcakes. She says it was hard trying to comply with all the codes.
Although some things didn't seem to make sense, I quit kind of trying to fight it. And it was more like, okay, if you're telling me this is what it's going to take, then that's what I will do.
Kurtz says business is good, and she's hoping to expand to the suburbs. Meantime, Chef Matt Maroney is still hoping just to get off the ground. He recently opened a brick-and-mortar restaurant called the Gastro Wagon. Admittedly, the wagon part of that name will make more sense, assuming he gets his permit for a food truck. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold for Marketplace.
And finally, a session in the tanning booth is now more expensive.
A tax on tanning salons was imposed to help pay for the new health care law, and the tax takes effect today.
To beat the price increase, salons report customers have been rushing to get in as many tanning sessions as they could.
Does that sound healthy to you?
It really doesn't.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.